Professor Yolanda Anderson, December 4, 2008.
Okay. Thank you so much for agreeing to participate in this project. It will surely benefit the community now and in the future. The goal of this questionnaire is to produce a detailed and coherent narrative of your story. In light of that, we encourage you to feel free not to worry about providing an answer that's too in-depth or long. That is exactly what we want. We realize you have already signed the consent form, but we also want to let you know that you should feel free to tell us if there's any particular thing or things you say during the course of the interview that you would like us to keep out of the educational, exhibition, or presentation materials to be created based on your interview. Let's start with question number one about background. Okay. Tell me about your place of birth and what was going on there as you were growing up. So first of all, where were you born?
I was born right here in the city of Colón.
Right. And what do you remember from your earliest days?
Okay, I remember a city in which was very cosmopolitan at the time. We had bases in the city, not directly in the city, but in the province, around very close to the area. We had a very strong American community because of the canal. We had commissaries and all that good stuff, and the city was practically divided into two parts. We had a canal zone area where black people lived, and we had a Cristobal area where the white Americans lived. And I remember very distinctly that was within the confines, the contour of the city, and the Panamanian population that lived in the city at the time were not permitted to cross over into that area. It was just streets. There was nothing that blocked it off, but you could be taken to jail for trespassing. There was a canal zone court. There were canal zone policemen that patrolled in those areas, and those areas were primarily prohibited to Panamanian people.
Now, talk to me a little bit about your childhood. What was your childhood like, and what are your fondest memories and favorite anecdotes?
I have a lot of good memories of my childhood. I think I was very fortunate in many ways. It was primarily based on a British West Indian cultural background. We went to Sunday school and we participated in drama clubs and we did music lessons and we did embroidery and all that good stuff. And we went to little schools where English was taught by teachers who had multi-graded class schoolrooms. And that's where we learned to read and write in English, because the schools in the area were primarily Panamanian schools where Spanish was taught. So we started schools in these little homes underneath little buildings. I primarily studied with Mrs. Arthur, Clarice Arthur, for about 3 years before actually going into a structured Panamanian school system.
Okay. Now, tell me about your parents and your grandparents. Where were they from, and how did they come to be in Panama if they were not from Panama?
Okay, my mother and father are Panamanians. They were born here.
In Colón.
In Colón. But my grandparents came from my mother's side, they came from the island of Jamaica. And by my father's side, the Cayman Islands. And the men primarily came with the construction of the Panama Canal.
I didn't realize Cayman Islands was also...
Yes, there were a few of them from the Cayman Islands, and there were a few people from Montserrat and that area too. So we also had, different holidays that would be celebrated, like during the month of July 14th, that it was Vive la France. You had a French club and the French people were dressed in their native costumes and you had a big party and everybody knew it was time for the French clubs. And then you had a small Colombian community also. And then 20th of July was Viva Colombia and things like that. So they were from all over the Caribbean, if you want to say that.
Now, what about the grandmothers? Did they come with your grandfathers, or did they meet in Panama, and why and how did they come?
As far as I can remember, and having been told, some of them came, two of them came after, but came because they were coming to get married.
So they knew their husbands?
Yes, they certainly did. They didn't meet them here.
Alright. Let's go through some of their professions. What was your father and your mother's profession?
My mother was a seamstress, and my father worked in an office as an accountant.
And your grandparents, your paternal grandparents, what kind of work did they do?
Well, my both grandfathers worked in the canal doing whatever it is that they did at the time, and my maternal grandparents worked at home. They were basically moms taking care of the kids and the house and all that.
Did you learn to sew from your mom?
I certainly did. From my mom and from everybody else that was available during the vacation period. You sewed and you did embroidery, and I learned to play the piano with an uncle that played the piano for the churches and all that good stuff. So, and we did, during vacation time, we did anything that was available. And in a little church hall or in somebody's home, whatever it was.
Okay, now tell me a little bit more about the school. What was school like? How and who were your teachers? And what things do you remember just in general?
School at the beginning for me was very traumatic, difficult. As I was saying, it was a bit difficult for me because when I finally got into the structured Panamanian system, I couldn't speak Spanish because at home English was spoken. And I could do my math, but I had problems with everything else because I knew nothing in Spanish. So at first it was kind of difficult. But then, like by the time we got to the second and third grade, it started to get much easier, and we simply mingled. It was a custom in the city during that time that people mingled a lot, because you would find on most of the buildings, there were Spanish neighbors and there were West Indian neighbors, and the Spanish people picked up English from the West Indians, and the West Indians picked up Spanish from the natives. So after a while, you just fit in, and it kind of worked out fine.
Do you have any favorite teachers? You mentioned Ms. Arthur.
Okay, Mrs. Arthur was in my very early days, 4, 5, 6 years old. Even though we continued a relationship until I was almost an adult. Because I am a Methodist by my parents, and she was also a Methodist, so it was somebody that I kept in contact with, and I used to participate in a lot of elocutionary item programs, with elocutionary items on programs, and she was generally the person who trained me during that time. So I kept in touch with her. In my primary school, I always remembered a teacher by the name of Rosaura Gondola. She was my fourth grade teacher. And for some reason, she was one of those persons that left an impact on you. Maybe because of the way she taught, maybe because of the way she made things look easy for you. But I always remembered her very fondly.
All right. Talk a little bit about music. What kind of music did you grow up hearing, and what were your favorite songs and singers?
Okay, I grew up in a house that was with a very large family. I had 6 uncles, I had 2 aunts, and mother and father. And it was very diversified what went on in the house, in the sense of in the area of music. For example, I heard a lot of classical music because of my uncle who played the piano. I heard a lot of rhythm and blues because of some of the others. Very little Latin music. Very little Latin music. Quite a good amount of jazz. So it was kind of eclectic to a certain extent.
Any particular singers or songs you want to mention?
I can remember from very, very early being attached to Nat King Cole. I got a scholarship when I came out of the ninth grade, and every time I got the scholarship, I would logically we gave the money to our moms and they put it up or whatever they did with it. And some part of it was always given to you for an allowance. And the first thing I did every time I got my little allowance was to go out and get a record of Nat King Cole. And I still have them up to today. Little 45s and little 33s, and I still have them until today.
Now, can I get you to sing or recite?
Oh my Lord, what would I tell you? I don't know if I can sing. And to recite, what could I say? What could I remember? What could I remember of recitations? There are so many little things that probably come to mind. Maybe I could leave it for the end. Something would come to mind.
Alright, no problem. Now, how about the music you listen to today? What are your favorite songs now?
Okay, I listen to Latin music and I listen to regular English rhythm and blues. I like rhythm and blues a lot. I love calypsos. I enjoy calypsos. I listen to a lot of Ricardo Montaner, Luis Miguel. Maybe I'm kind of sentimental when it comes to music, but I also like to dance, so if it's okay. For some unknown reason, or maybe because of the way I was trained or what I came up in, I am not very attached to reggae. However, I enjoy Bob Marley. So, what can I tell you? Maybe it's the deterioration between what they are doing today as reggae as opposed to what happened with Bob Marley's reggae, which was a type of reggae that sent a message. That makes a difference for me.
Okay. What are your favorite sayings and where did you first hear them or learn them?
Wow, what are my favorite sayings? One of the first things that I can remember as a saying, I don't know if it was coined, I don't know if it was invented, but it was instilled in me by my mother, is that you can do whatever you want to. And I have used that as a creed until today because I really believe that is so. So that would be one of the favorites.
Alright. Have you ever heard of Louise Bennett?
Yes, I've heard of Louise Bennett. I used to recite some of her poems. I think I have a little book at home still with some of her poems. Mm-hmm. I had one that was stolen from me. I took it with me to a program and it was stolen. And I think I finally got another one. I have it at home. Yes, I have it.
So what do you think, what thoughts come to you when you think about her poems and
Okay, when I think of Louise Bennett, I go back to my grandmother. Because there are a lot of things in her sayings that I remember. There are a lot of expressions that I can relate to because of my grandparents. And I visited Jamaica 3 times. And every time I go there, I pick up another one of Louise Bennett's phrases and get the interpretation of what it means. Because there are some of them that I can relate to because of my grandmother, and there are others that I would repeat but not really knowing what it meant, and that brought it back to me. And as far as Louise Bennett is concerned, I once wrote a paper while I was studying English at the University of Panama with sayings that were used during the days of the constructions. But nobody knew. We knew what it meant, but we never related to the origin, why it was coined in that way. And I did a research on some of those words and phrases, and it became very interesting to me. Like, for example, the word pickney. Everybody would say pickney, and we know that pickney meant a little girl, but we didn't know exactly why pickney. It didn't have anything to do with little or girl. And from the research, I found out that pickney really came from picanini. And this picanini was coined, the nini referring to small, and it was coined during the days of slavery, and where the white man used it to demean what a little child might mean, or a little boy, and would call the little white slaves picanini. And through some deterioration over the time, it became pickney.
Do you still have that paper that you wrote for the university with the plane?
I must have it somewhere in my house, among the millions of papers, but I should have it. Okay. Okay. During the Christmas cleaning, if I come up with it, I'll keep it and give you a call.
Great, great. Now, do you know the Mighty Sparrow?
I certainly do. I have met him in person.
Ah, okay. What do you think about him?
I think he's fantastic. I think I have maybe 80% of his records. I told you I love calypsos. And I like his music because of the messages that are hidden in what he sings. And I think it takes a very intelligent person to put things together in the way that he does, to send the message across that he wants to send. So I do enjoy Mr. Slinger very much.
Did you play sports as a child?
Very little. Some volleyball, and some track and field while I was in high school.
Do you still do any of those two sports, or do you watch them on TV?
No, I don't do any, but I do watch boxing on TV. I am a very avid basketball fan of the Lakers, I might say. And I have lately got into soccer. And I mean, yeah, football. I've lately gotten into soccer and enjoy the Brazilians and all the games that go on.
Are you one of these Barca versus, which is the other?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what did you think about American culture as a youth growing up?
In what sense?
Just what were you exposed to, and what did you like it, did you not like it, what did you think about what you were exposed to?
Coming from the background that I was coming from, I won't say that I like or I dislike it, in the sense that I think culture is something that we didn't invent, and we grow up into it, and we just become whatever is given to us. But if you ask me to compare it and to choose one of the two, the American culture over this British West Indian culture that I have, I would say I would stay with mine. And I would stay with mine because of there's a lot of good that I can find in the American culture. However, there are a lot of things with which I can't commune openly. I think they are much too permissive to a certain degree, and maybe too open if I compare it to what I grew up with and came to respect as a British West Indian culture.
What qualities, cultural behaviors, or other things do you associate with West Indian, so with being West Indian?
A lot of that has been lost, unfortunately. But I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the respect for adults and people in general. I appreciate the deportment in general that I was taught that a person should have, know when to speak, know when not to speak, know how to dress appropriately for certain things. Cleanliness. I think as far as West Indians were concerned, education was to be cherished above everything else. A fear of God. That upbringing in which from a child you were brought up in a Christian environment. You could deviate after a while, you got older and you decided, I didn't want to be a Methodist, I wanted to become a Catholic, or I wanted to be whatever. But it was rooted in you that there was something bigger than you are that you needed to respect.
Now, how has knowing English affected you, whether positively or negatively?
I think it has affected me more, certainly positively, in every respect. I find nothing negative about it. And I'm not saying this because that I'm an English teacher, because that has nothing to do with it. But it has opened a lot of doors, simply because I can use English grammatically and I am able to communicate with people. And I think that English, it's not the most spoken language in the world, but it's definitely the language that is most used for communication purposes. And I think it has definitely been an asset throughout my whole life.
Okay. Are you married?
No, I'm divorced.
Do you have children?
Yes, I have 5 children. 4 girls, 1 boy.
Tell me a little about them. What do they do?
Okay, in many ways I think I have been very lucky. I have 5 children that are doing very well professionally. My eldest daughter is a computer engineer. She lives in Houston and she has been doing great. She has 1 son, a little boy, that is also doing very, very well, I'm happy to say. My second daughter is an electrical engineer and she works with ACP, you know, which was once the Canal Zone area. And she is in charge on the Atlantic side of the Department of Communication. Everything that has to do with the telephones and anything that makes the boat go through the canal, that's her job. And then after her comes a pair of twins, identical twins, in every respect, I must say. But because of me knowing them and studying them, I separated them when it came to profession. So the eldest one of the twins is also an electrical engineer. And the other one...
Good morning. Almost, and you were telling me about your twin.
Oh, yes, okay. So one of them is an electrical engineer also, and the other one is an economist. She works with economy, and they're both living in Belgium. And then the little boy, who came 9 years after everything happened that I thought that I wasn't having anybody else, came along. He graduated here at the school, and then he went on to Texas A&M. And he's an environmental engineer living in Miami, and he's doing fantastic. So, you see, I've been blessed.
Now, do your children speak English?
They speak both languages. There's no way they have a mom that teaches English and they don't speak English. I am not one of those West Indians that have kids that don't speak English. That is a no-no.
Okay. You said you have 1 grandchild?
No, I have 3. My eldest daughter has a son. Adriel is 12 now. And he's doing very good. He goes to a little school called the School in the Mountains in Houston. And he has been doing fantastic. And he's now in the 8th grade, finishing the 8th grade. And then my second daughter has a little girl who's here at school with me. She's in the 5th grade, also playing the piano now. And then my baby, which is a boy, has a little girl who is 2. So I have three grandchildren.
And they speak English too.
Most definitely so.
Great. Do you have family who live overseas? I know you said your daughter in Houston.
I have a sister. I have one sister, and she lives in Long Island in New York.
And you have also the twins in Belgium.
Right. And the boys in Miami here. I only have one daughter here with me, which is the second one.
Okay. So, can I ask why Belgium? That's awesome.
Okay. Let me give you a story. One of the twins got married. And their husband worked with Sea Trade. And they moved him around. They were first in Curacao, they left Curacao, and they sent him to Argentina. And they were in Argentina for 2 years. And then they transferred him to Belgium. When they transferred her to Belgium, him to Belgium, logically she went along with him. The other twin was here, working here. And she went to Belgium for a month. She never came back. That's how identical they are. Wow. So that's why they're in Belgium.
Wow. Well, I hear it's easy to travel to Belgium from Panama. I heard it's
non-stop KLM, and it's a beautiful place. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place.
Awesome. Now, when your children or family that live in the U.S. or abroad in Belgium, when they come to Panama, do other Panamanians treat them as less Panamanian or not?
Not really. We have not encountered that. I don't know if it's because of the circle in which we move or... But we have never really encountered that in an outward manner. Now, you must remember, they all went to school here. So they still have friends here. So they would move among their peers and...
Yeah.
I have never not really encountered problems with that.
Okay. And now, have you ever... either visited or lived abroad?
I have never lived abroad. I have visited Europe quite a lot because the twins are there. I have gone logically very often to the U.S. Because of my position here in the school, I've had the opportunity to go to lots of Latin American countries because of different conferences with the kids. You don't have to know. A lot of American conferences. We have been to Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, San Salvador. Personally, I went to Colombia. I went to Ecuador, and I visited a lot in the Caribbean, on the Caribbean islands also. So.
Now, when you travel, no, which is many different places, what would you say is your experience overall, but also in terms of what they know about Panama, Panamanians, and Panamanian Latinians?
I would generally say, no, as far as Latin America is concerned, okay, more or less, about Panama, not necessarily about the West Indian culture. Unless maybe if you went to Costa Rica, and that is because they are next door neighbors. If I go to the islands, like when I go to Jamaica, I've been to Curacao, I've been to Martinique, St. Thomas, quite a few areas of island to the Bahamas, they don't know a lot about the West Indian culture. And they are surprised when you say I'm from Panama and then you speak English. It like doesn't jive. To the different states that I have visited in the U.S., because I studied in the U.S. on different occasions, in Miami, at the Miami University, in Vermont, in La Salle, in Louisiana. They would generally say, where are you from? I'm from Panama. Panama? Some of them have never heard of it, whatever. And then the next question would come, oh, but that's Latin America. You speak English? Yes. And then the minute I say, oh, yes, we speak English, then they detect that I have an accent. They detect that I have an accent. And then some would go like, oh, but there's an accent. Is it British? Is it West Indian? It's definitely not American, and that sort of thing. In Europe, Nobody really ever acted strange about that or asked anything about that. And I think maybe it's because that, like Belgium, there's a large cosmopolitan crowd of people. We find a lot of Africans, a lot of whatever. Surprisingly, in London also, there are a lot of Africans in London, and that was a very shocking experience for me. I never expected the London that I saw, you know, very mixed culture of people and that sort of thing. But in America, yes, I have found that.
Now, we're almost done. What specific message would you like to communicate to the younger people of the community?
Oh, there's a lot of messages I would like to communicate. And I find it hard sometimes communicating to the younger people to get the results that you would like to get, because I feel that some of the things that I would like to communicate are things that have to be instilled at a very young age. I think they're not really keen in pursuing dreams. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if they have dreams sometimes. I find their behaviors not in accordance with what I think in the 21st century should be their behaviors, as far as their deportment, as far as the way they dress themselves, as far as the things that they're interested in, the things that they give value to. And sometimes I would feel that the problem stems with upbringing, with homes that are maybe parents that are not doing the jobs that they should do. Maybe they're all too busy now and too occupied. And these children have responsibility for themselves at too early an age, when they are not really able to discern and make a distinction or choose. And if I could really find a way in which I could start with even a very small group of people and get this message across and help them to become, think differently, act differently, and for their own private benefit, I think I would certainly enjoy that. But I don't know why I have tried to do it. Well, here at the school, and this is one of the things that I'm very disturbed about, to a certain extent, if the word disturbed is the right word, in that I feel that here at the school I have been able to inject a lot. But I'm not injecting it with the people with whom I would like to inject it. And so I would try to take it on with me to the university where I work. But then there I get people that are already adults. And it makes it more difficult.
Okay. Alright, so you're talking about the work that you do at the university.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. You teach at NAC at the university?
Yes, I do. I teach grammar and methodology.
Okay. Great. And do you teach teachers?
Teachers, primarily teachers. Well, people that are in the English department are generally either already teaching or aiming to. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, last question, is there any other information you want to include that we have not yet touched upon, or if you remember any more sayings you wanted to add, or anything like that?
No, there's not a lot that I would like to include. I think that it has been very thorough. I think that the project is a very outstanding project, and I sincerely trust that you will be able to carry it across full length, and that it might reach to a lot of people within this type of community with which we are working with, West Indian community. I think the West Indian community as such has a lot to offer to any community. And I think that it should be, for what it began as in this part of the world, I think it has a lot to contribute, and I think that it is a pity that a lot of it has been lost. Because I can certainly see, looking back in retrospect, how it helped in the city of Cologne. Knowing what the city of Cologne was when we had a 70% West Indian community within the confines of what the city of Cologne was, the difference that exists now, because that community is dormant and even to a certain extent non-existent as far as the city is concerned, and I can see the difference, right? It is like from here to the moon, totally different culturally and in religiously, in every aspect. And I think that it hasn't been for the better but for the worse. And if I make that comparison, then I think I am very justified in saying that it is a pity that this has happened, because we could contribute more. However, if the saying that I go with, you can do whatever you want to do and you set your mind to doing, then I believe that in some small way, the association, the group, whatever we want to call it, can contribute in making an impact. In making an impact, and then if this impact reaches to the younger people in even a very small way, maybe there are a lot of things that we could bring back that would be beneficial on a whole to Panama as a country, to Panama as a country.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much for participating, for giving us your time, and feel free to contact us if you have any questions or want to add anything.
And you know, I have your email, and I certainly will.
Absolutely. All right.